People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. This is Fine Music Radio, and Rodney Trudgeon welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. This weekend, a play opened at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay called Fordsburg's Finest, and written by and stars Paul Slabilepsy as well as Chi Mende. It's been directed by Bobby Heaney. Now, Paul Slabilepsy is my guest today, a well-known award-winning South African playwright who holds the ability to reflect an authentic South African landscape with its turbulent political background, vibrant cultures and inhabitants, and to invoke empathy for all of his diverse characters. His plays exploit the unease and uncertainty of lower middle class white South Africans. So, Paul, it's a great pleasure to welcome you to Fine Music Radio and to People of Note. Welcome.
Thank you, Rodney. It's lovely to be here.
It's nice to be here because you live in Johannesburg, don't you?
Yes, yes, I do. I do. Yes.
And so when you come to Cape Town, I hope you enjoy being down here and getting good audiences and having a blast.
I do. I love coming back to Cape Town. Of course, I was at UCT and then, of course, founded the space with Bill Flynn, Ethel Fugard, Yvonne Brusland.
Yes, those names. John Carney. That's
John Carney, yeah. So it's a very, very, very special place, Cape Town.
The space, by the way, it's interesting that you said you founded it because it was quite innovative, wasn't it? It was the first place to allow mixed audiences.
Yes, it was. It was the very first theatre in South Africa.
And even ahead of the Market Theatre.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
Market started in 76. Base was 72. So it was the very first and very exciting times.
With big names like that
yes,
as well.
Yes.
And did you get into lots of trouble or was it a difficult ride?
Oh, yes, it was. I mean, we used to have the security police every night. In fact, Billy Flynn and I used to, we'd come off stage and say, third row, yeah, fourth from the end, security policemen. We could see them, we could pick them out in the audience.
Oh, they were actually in the audience?
Oh, yes, they'd come and watch and see what was going on.
Okay.
We also had to stay one step ahead of the law. In fact, Brian Asprey had a club. You pay 1 cent to join the club, which meant it was a club. So
yes.
Means anyone can come to the club.
Yes.
So there were all sorts of the subversive. And that's how we used to do the theatre in those days.
But what good memories. Were you born in Cape Town?
No,
you come from overseas.
I was born in Bolton in Lancashire.
Oh, okay.
My father was a Spitfire pilot in the Royal Air Force. He was a Polish fighter pilot.
Is there Polish in your name? Is your name Polish?
Yes, okay. It is. My dad was, yeah. And that's where he met my mother, in at Blackpool, and they got married. I was born in Bolton, and we came to South Africa when I was, 2 years old.
Okay. So we can call you a good old South African, also because of the plays you've written. There are so many. I'm trying to think, which is that very famous one, Saturday Night at
the Palace? Yes.
Yeah, that was a big hit for
it's
you, wasn't
it? It's still a set work. And
is it, really?
Yes, in 1982 I wrote that. And, it's still a set work. But there are, there's 38 plays since then.
So. Have you done 38 plays?
Yeah, and they've all been produced. So I've had a wonderful, exciting ride.
It has been, goodness.
And, you know, it's interesting, they're not all lower-class characters. In fact, I'm doing Planet Perth again. It hasn't been to Cape Town. We're going to bring it next year. About people used to be called the Chicken Run in the old days.
Yes.
But people immigrating to Australia.
Packing for Perth, as we used to say.
Packing for Perth, yeah. This is called Planet Perth.
Planet Perth.
And it was Fiona Ramsey, Sean Taylor, and Mike Richard many years ago. And now I've rewritten the play for now because there's another flight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite interesting. And these are people who live in Sandton in Johannesburg and very.
But this thing, as I quoted here, you are able to exploit the unease and uncertainty of lower middle class white South Africans.
Yes.
That's very much been part of your strength,
yes.
For want of a better word.
Yes, it has. I mean, Planet Perth is very different, as was Pale Natives. But
Pale Natives, of course, that's
Pale
right.
Natives,
that was also yours.
Yes, yes. And also I've written a few screenplays lately, last few years.
Oh, have you?
Actually, at the moment, I'm on Showmax doing Mr. Johnson. I've been nominated Best Actor for the SAFTA Awards.
In a show, Max.
In a film. Best feature film. Best actor in a feature film. So that'll be on, I think, in a month's time or 2nd of September, they're giving out the awards.
Oh, well, we'll hold thumbs for you,
Paul. Thank you.
But you've been on television as well, haven't you, here in this country?
Yes, a lot with Billy Flynn for many years and... I've done so much on television and film, but it's mainly the stage. Mm-hmm. I mean,
is that what you prefer, the stage, to anything else?
Absolutely. We rode that huge crest of a wave, the World Cup final in Rugby World Cup in 1995, Heel Against the Head. We did that for 3 years.
Wow!
And then made a film of it afterwards. Yeah. So that was very
sad. You've spoken about Bill Flynn a few times, and you were great friends, weren't you? And he died tragically young, really.
Yes.
In the great scheme of things.
Yes, for 40 years. We met at drama school, UCT, and for 40 years we were best buddies. And yeah, he died aged 58. Mm-hmm. It's almost 15 years now.
Is it that long?
Long ago, yeah.
And somehow your characters seem to complement each other so well when you were on stage together.
Yes. I mean, I've known Bill, and I knew Bill so well. I felt I could write for him, mm-hmm. and always had this double act, as it were, you know. And I'd always be the bad guy.
Yes, that's right. You're always the bad guy.
He'd be the teddy bear that everyone loved.
Yes, that's right. Gosh, a great loss to South African theatre.
Oh, terrible loss.
Now, Paul, your first piece of music is interesting because you've chosen something sung by your wife, Carol Slablepsy, Stand By Me. Just tell me a little bit about the song.
Well, it's very interesting. I mean, I met Carol. I mean, I heard Carol before I ever saw her. I was at Ron France's house, Ron France in the old days. I was staying with them, and it was a New Year's Eve. Anyway, I came into the house, and... there was a party going on in the kitchen, and I heard someone singing. And I thought, gosh, if this person is half as gorgeous as her voice, I am lost. And sure enough, went into the kitchen. And it was Carol singing. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, she's always been a wonderful, wonderful singer. She still sings in choirs and things in Johannesburg. And when I did my latest play, Borderline, at the Market Theatre, which we did a couple of months back, I needed a version of Stand By Me. To end it. And my son-in-law now, strange enough, he's a classical pianist. He's also plays jazz piano. And I said, would you make an arrangement of this? And I said, and Carol will sing it. And that's what happened. And I made a recording, and so many people after the play, you know, would say, who is singing this song? And got a great compliment from PJ Powers saying that.
Really?
Yeah, she said it was one of the best versions she'd heard. So, of course, now it's become one of my favorite songs.
Of course. Well, let's listen. Now, this is Carol Slablepsy, Stand By Me.
When the night has come and the land is dark, and the moon is the only light we see. No, I won't be afraid. No, I won't be afraid, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. If the sky that we look upon should tumble and fall, and the mountains should crumble to the sea, I won't cry, I won't cry, I won't shed a tear, just as long as you stand by me. So darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. darling, darling, stand by me. Oh, stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. Stand by me. Whenever you're in trouble, won't you stand by me? Stand by me when the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we see.
Well, that's a famous song, and indeed, Paul, your wife, Carol Slavilepsy, singing on that recording, which apparently you used in your production of Borderline. So, well done. But now, does she not sing solo anymore? You said she sings in choirs and stuff. But
yes.
She's not a career singer. So
No. I mean, she was a ballet dancer. I mean, she danced for K-Pab. That's when I met her, okay. You know. And but she always took a guitar along on tours, and all the ballet, you go off on the bus and you just hear her with her guitar. So she's always...
What was her maiden name as a
Carol ballet? Longfield.
Carol Longfield. Okay, yes. All right. Yeah. I'm talking to Paul Slavilepsy, the actor, whose play, Fordsburg's Finest, has just opened at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. And I'm intrigued. Now, let me just read it, and then you need to just help me with this.
Yes.
It says here, in his uplifting play, Fordsburg's Finest, Paul depicts an empowered and impassioned woman as the focus of his tale, while taking the audience on a nostalgic journey of recognition, sensitivity, and insight, relating to this woman, Tandi, played by Chimende, from an American exile to South Africa. And you go on to say that you're living in a run-down used car salesman. And just tell me a bit about this play and what inspired you to write it, Paul.
Well, you know, working at the Market Theatre over the years, you can go the back way through Fordsburg. And I've always been fascinated the way the landscape changes. And Fordsburg was very different when I was there at the beginning, the opening of the Market in 76. And it's always interested me, and also I found an old map of what it looked like in the 50s, and a lot of houses being torn down. It's very similar to District 6 in Cape Town, where people were uprooted and sent off. I think they're called Fitas as well. It's another name for Fordsburg, and it has a remarkable history. And plays come to me from all different directions, and suddenly
the muse arrives.
Yeah, it arrives, and one story collides with another, and that's what happened with this one. I imagined someone born there and being uprooted and leaving, and I thought of the story of a black musician who lived in Fordsburg and leaving South Africa and going to America with his wife and a 10-month-old daughter. And what would happen if a daughter came back to look for the house she was born? Because the parents have died. So I was working in America at the time. In fact, I was doing my Moy Street moves in Washington.
Oh, gosh.
It was an American company doing it. I was directing it. So I spent some time with African-Americans in Washington. And I think that's where the two ideas came together. I thought, how about an African-American woman going back to the place she was born, but having no connection whatsoever with it, and then wondering why she had to leave, why the family had to leave, and she knows a bit about the history. She's a librarian, this character. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, to come back, what would be the strangest thing for her to find? What would she find in place of where their house was? I thought, how about a real old South African thing, a used car salesman?
Yes.
And you know, what's interesting about the play is that you don't find these Foxy Freddies anymore. Mm-hmm. This Foxy Freddy Forskank, who I play in them, they've gone now. They call them previously owned. They don't call them used cars anymore. And also, they're run by big dealerships They're very different. And also you get them online. So you find an old car online. So the whole thing of a used car salesman has moved away. It's like the cigarette salesman as well.
Yes.
So in a sense, there's some nostalgia there, you know. But also, anyway, she comes back and she finds this, instead of her house, she finds this garish used car lot. And this lonely man who runs it, who's lost his wife, he's lost his son. Well, you hear all about that in the play, so I don't want to give too much away. But it's a meeting of two lost souls, really, because she's been brought up by an African-American family in 123 West Street in New York, Harlem area.
Oh, yes.
And so she's very sophisticated, and she comes and meets this Foxy Freddy who runs this thing. And we track their histories, really. She is sort of angry. She's trying to retrace the path, going back to her roots, basically. Mm-hmm. And also, it was a time, I wrote this play at a time when there were a lot of African Americans returning to Africa, or South Africa particularly.
Yes. The sort of roots thing. Yes.
Roots. Yeah. Yeah.
Discover Africa.
That was also a very big thing at the time. Mm-hmm. So, so that was interesting for me.
But Freddie Fox, what's his name?
Foxy Freddie Forskink. Yes.
Forskink.
Yes, Forskink.
I see. What was his background? Did they then get together? Or again, we mustn't give too much away.
Yes, too away. No, no. She just finds him there running this place, and he's on his own, runs solo.
Where her house was.
Yes, where her house was. So there's a whole journey around that.
Yeah.
And then you see how they come together. It's a very, you'd think it's a very odd mix. How is this possible? But of course, when two souls come together in this environment, it's like being on a desert island, really.
Yes.
It's after closing time, so I go from late afternoon into evening.
Mm-hmm.
And she's been in South Africa for 3 weeks, and it's only now that she comes to the place. She didn't know when she should come. What would she find? Would she find anything? This huge expectation is built up.
Yeah.
What is she going to find? And then is it going to give her any answers as to what happened to her parents? And, of course, he's able to give some of her history. And so there's a clash, of course, because he's a white man who offers her tea and coffee and coffee and cookies and and all that sort of stuff. So it's an unlikely meeting to two different characters.
Yeah.
It was a three-hander originally. I wrote Rocco. Was in the original play that I did with Marius Veyers and Dorcas M. Johnson, who came from New York. Laura Foote and I, in fact, auditioned in New York when I had a play on at the Lincoln Center.
Mm.
And Laura directed the first production at the Market Theatre. It was a time, very short season. And I always thought it had wonderful reviews from Rayford Daniel, Michael Venables, Barry Hoch, and Rayford said it was my best play ever, and but it's been lying asleep
in the bottom drawer.
Yeah. So I took the character of Rocco out. In fact, we did a play reading for a drama circle in New York during COVID, and that convinced me to tweak the play, work on it again, and bring it back, because the response was overwhelming. It was amazing. Yeah.
Because Fordsburg is, it's a lower middle class suburb, isn't it? But it also had white people there, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Poor whites, actually, alongside people of colour.
Yes, that's right.
Living actually quite happily together, as with District
and
6 and Triumph, Sophia Town.
Yeah, until the government came. I was also in the 50s, I think, and moved everyone out.
All right, now you mentioned P.J. Powers earlier, Paul, talking about your wife, Stand By Me, but now you've chosen her as well, The World in Union. Why have you chosen her and this?
Well, this there again is a sort of memory of Bill Flynn. We did our play Heel Against the Head that, according to Mornay Duplessis, went a long way in helping, nudging the box to win the World Cup in 95, because they came to see a performance two nights before they played France. And that was the song of the time. PJ Power singing World in Union, the World Cup rugby song.
There's a dream.
song. That, as Paul said, for the World Cup, The World in Union, with PJ Powers there. And my guest on People of Note here on Fine Music Radio this week is Paul Slabolepsy, whose classic play, Fordsburg's Finest, has just opened at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. And you told us a lot about the play itself, but I just want to find out a little about you. I mean, it was interesting that I do remember you as always playing the ruffians in your various plays. And as you said, poor old Bill being the teddy, the soft teddy boy. But you said you were born in Bolton in England and came out here when you were very young. And the other thing that interests me here is that your initial intention was to become a radio sports commentator. Why did you want to do that? I mean, I know it must be a wonderfully exciting job.
Well, no, I was at a Catholic boarding school in Petersburg, now Polokwane, and I was, I think I've got ADHD, whatever you call it. I was running around like a mad thing all the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, my marks were always great at school, but I was always looking out of the window, waiting to get outside to go and kick a ball about.
You know? Oh, really? To actually play sport?
Yes,
as well.
Play. Oh, and I played a lot of sport. I mean, I swam, I ran, I was, won Victor Ludorum in swimming, athletics, year after year, captain of soccer and cricket. And yeah, I was just mad about sport. And, and that's how I found my... I was quite a shy kid, but sport gave me great joy. And, you know, there again, that's why I could... Theatre was a way for me. I mean, I was telling stories. I've got a little Modderfontein Dynamite Factory nursery school report, age 3.5. It says, Paul stands on a Coca-Cola box and loves telling stories. He entertained the whole nursery school. I was doing that at age 3.
Good grief.
So this is my... Had to.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
My dad wanted me to become an engineer. He was an engineer. And he said, you will. Science, maths, engineering, that's the thing. Kind of those are the days when you did what your father told you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and but I went to UCT and thinking I desperately wanted to do broadcasting, not broadcasting as such, but commentating.
Yes.
I mean, I used to sit at the side of the games at school, the games I wasn't playing, and I'd have one of those old-fashioned tape recorders and click. And I'd, and so and so gets a ball and thing, and down he, oh, cross, and so I'd commentate.
Yeah.
And all the boys would gather around. Oh, I mean, never mind the recording, they'd listen to me recording.
Yes.
Watch me recording.
Meanwhile, nothing was happening on the ground.
No. A game was in progress.
So you were commentating on that game?
Yes, I'd commentate all the other games. Said, please commentate our game. We want the tape.
Right.
So I'd do all that. And, So I said to my dad when I went to UCT, you know, those are the days you could go to UCT, you could pass your exams and then choose when you got there what you wanted to do. It's not like that
not
anymore.
Like that today.
I said, let me do a BA first. He said, oh, okay, as long as you then go on and do your BCom or B, whatever,
clever
engineering or whatever. Yeah. So I there was this degree called BA Broadcasting at that time at UCT, and you had to go to Seapoint Studios, do a McCormack, and do all that sort of stuff. And what happened during the course of all that is I went to the Little Theatre for the first time because they had a studio up on the hitting campus. And I saw these people, and I saw a Robert Moore production of Kabuki, and it just blew me away. Peter Dirk Ace was in that play, playing a geisha girl. And I said, this is me. This is my world. And I just, straight in, and no looking back. And that was way back in 1968.
So nothing came of the broadcasting degree?
No. I got my BA eventually.
But moved away from broadcasting.
Because I was looking for something,
yes.
You know. That
yes.
And broadcasting would have given me that. Being a sports broadcaster, I think I would have had fun and enjoyed it. And in fact, you know, many, many years later, when the world... I used to work for Ali Bacha at the Wanderers Stadium in Johannesburg, at the cricket matches, for the World Cup, that we had the World Cup here, I'd sit and do the public address, telling the people, here we have the West Indies coming out, and so-and-so bowling from the north side. And the call at drive end is Alan Donald. So, but not commentating, but with the 30,000 in the ground,
yes.
Telling them who was bowling, change of bowling, what was going on. So in a sense, I came back to that many years later. And it was great traveling around the World Cup when we had
Of course.
I had my own vehicle, went to East London, PE, arrived at the ground, had all my stuff, sat at the microphone and and telling the audience to watch the bees in their cool drink cans, you know.
Really?
That sort of stuff. You know?
Now, look, let's have another track of music. Brian Ferry you've got here, Paul. As Smoke Gets in Your Eyes. Famous old song.
Yes.
Given the Brian Ferry treatment, I presume. I haven't heard this recording.
Oh, yes. It's lovely. This is one of my favorite recording of this song. And, in fact, I use this in Planet Perth. It's one of my, you know, I love to choose the tracks I use in my music. You'll see in Forsberg as well.
Mm.
I've chosen a lovely track. And Brian Ferry has always been one of my favorites. And no one sings this song like he does.
They asked me how I viewed my true love was true. Oh, I of course replied, something here inside cannot be denied. Oh no. They said someday you'll find all who love are blind. On fire, you must be alive. Smoke gets in your eyes. So by chance, then, and I gained in that to think they could doubt.
Version of that old classic, Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, with Brian Ferry. And it was the choice. Paul Sublepsy is my guest on People of Note this week. And as I've been telling you, his play, Forsberg's Finest, has just opened this weekend at Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. It runs until the 10th of September. You mentioned earlier about directing, and I kind of don't think of you as a director, but you have directed a fair amount, haven't you?
A few of my own plays, yes. I've done that sometimes when I've wanted to. It's nice to be at the helm. I think Assel's done this a few times. Assel Fugard, the first time he puts his play on, a new play, because you're able to doctor it in rehearsal.
And look at it as a whole from the audience.
Yeah, and then I don't, ideally I don't like doing that, but I have done on occasion. Look, I've had to make my own work over the years, freelance. Billy and I mean, I wrote plays for Billy and I remember Heel Against the Head, Running Riot, Pale Natives. These are plays I wrote.
Especially for Bill Flynn.
Well, Bill and other mates as well.
Right, right.
Ron Schmitzer, Danny Keough, Kate Edwards, who's now gone overseas.
because your director of this play is Bobby Heaney, who's another, shall we say, stalwart, a veteran of directing and acting when he was younger.
Yes, and he was at UCT, of course. We weren't there together. He was a good few years after me, but we were both from the UCT Little Theatre Drama School, Drama School. Right. Yeah.
But what you do, I mean, you obviously know Bobby Heaney very well and probably have done for many years. So he comes along to direct your play, and I've often wondered about the dynamic of that. You know, do you ever disagree with him? And he says, Paul, listen, I really don't think this is working. You should do that.
Oh, yes, all the time.
And then you disagree.
In fact, Bobby directed my first real big hit, Saturday Night at the Palace.
Yeah, that was, as we said earlier, a huge hit.
Huge hit. Played the whole country and then toured internationally. And Bobby was the director. And, you know, Bobby put his foot down in those days really and challenged me. You know, I need that kind of director. Yeah. Says, how about this? Have you thought of that? So Bobby is I always call him my safety net and my parachute. Both.
Saturday Night at the Palace, was that the one in the Roadhouse one?
Yes, that's right. Rocco's Burger Palace.
That's right.
Yeah.
With all the old style serving in your car. And all
that's right. You said. In fact, the audience sat, they ruled like they were sitting in their cars as they sat in the theatre, in the car park of the Roadhouse. Yeah.
Oh, that's a clever idea.
Yeah, it was.
Did you always want to kind of, when you started writing plays, did you always want to capture a local flavour like that? Something fundamentally South African.
Yes. I enjoy, well, I've done that as well in Boo to the Moon, another play. I thought I'd love a car on stage. So I had five matrix after a matrix dance coming home in South Coast somewhere. And they turn the car over, they roll the car, spiders driving the car, rolls the car. So we had this little old Fiat on stage, battered. And there's something about having a vehicle on stage was really exciting. And Palace, I wanted a motorbike, and I wanted to start the bike on stage. Really wanted to rev the audience up. Look, it was given to me by, I mean, I always wanted to write a play about the experiences I had had as a youngster, 15 years old, playing at Iskor van der Bell, playing soccer under the smokestacks of Iskor, and then going to the Roadhouse down the road and seeing these terrifying incidents that would take place, these racist incidents where with these ducktails, these guys would hoot the cars, the waiters would bring the trays and they smash the trays in their face and tell them to pick it up. You know, terrible things that happened. Yeah. And I couldn't do anything age 15. It just sat. And then I saw a little article on the front page of the Star. It said, bizarre attack on Roadhouse. Last night, two youths rode up on a motorbike, accosted the waiter, stole the money and rode away. And that's all it said. It was 10 lines. And I said, here's my play. I've seen this. I know this. Oh, and in 2 weeks, I wrote this play. And I wanted to give the audience the experience of that I'd had as a young 15-year-old. Could smell the chips being cooked in the back there, smell the sweat, smell the, and that's what it was like. It was completely visceral. I mean, the people were screaming. Oh, it was so powerful. It was, and that's why we toured everywhere with it.
I'm sure I saw it at the Market.
Yes.
Could that have been those years ago?
We had about three runs there. Went to Cape Town. We went to Durban. We went to Pretoria, we went to Bloemfontein, we had a huge thing in Bloemfontein where the rector of the university stood up screaming in the middle of the show, lies, lies.
Oh, really?
This does not happen in this country. Lies, lies. Yeah? Stormed out with 40 people. And the rest, because it was so powerful, the play, the rest of the audience just...
I remember it being extremely uncomfortable to watch. It was not a pleasant experience.
Well, I started... Well, you see, this is it. I started off as a comedy. The guys were laughing at Billy and jokes. We'd been to a party and I was talking about how to chat up chicks. And you blow smoke through your nose and... smoke comes out your nose and you're doing it, chat up a chicken. You know, so the first almost two-thirds of the play was out-and-out comedy. And Billy did a whole dance with Fats Dibeko and, hey, show me how to do the mind. You know, and so a lot of people had heard that about the comedy.
Of course,
when the play turns around and becomes this racist incident and there's death and all that sort of stuff, the audience just... And that's what gave it its power, you know. I remember a security policeman after the play one night. He was so stunned in the bar he was sitting. And he was going off to report it to his bosses that that this play must be banned. But by then, 20,000 people had seen it already around the country. And he was so shocked, he couldn't even talk. And he said, and we said, what's wrong? Why are you so worried? He says, what happens if someone from overseas sees this play? What will they think of us? And we said, they will think we are the polecats of the scum of the earth, because this is what apartheid does.
Yeah.
And I like to believe that that man walked away that night with a different
as a different man. Now, Paul, let's have another one of your music selections. What have you chosen for us this time?
I'd like to choose Johnny Clegg and The Crossing. It's also one of my favorite songs from way back. That's another song that I've used in Moy Street Moves, a play of mine. In fact, when I was in Washington, D.C., doing Moy Street Moves with a company there, I used this to end off the play. And the artistic director of the theater loved the music so much that she became a huge Johnny Clegg fan and even traveled to South Africa to watch him sing. So, and Johnny Clegg, I mean, we go back such a long time, and I think it's this beautiful song.
Yeah.
Clegg there, and that was called The Crossing. Another person we've lost tragically, haven't we, Johnny Clegg?
Yes.
And another choice of my guest, Paul Slavlepsy, chatting to me here on People of Note on Fine Music Radio. You know, Paul, we've spoken a lot about what you've done, but I can't think, I'm trying to think, you do act in other plays, don't you? You don't just act or direct your own plays. I mean, I know you've told me about film and stuff like that, but you, I think you even did Shakespeare.
Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, I worked with Dieter Reibler many years ago. I played Caspar. I've done Romeo and Juliet. I've played Tybalt. I've played Mercutio. What happens when you become a playwright and you act in your own plays, a lot of people think, oh, that's what he does now.
Mm.
You know, what's the point of asking him to be in anything because he does his own plays? But, I mean, I love doing working for other people and other directors.
Mm-hmm.
And doing, I love Shakespeare as well, you know. And but in recent years, I've done more and more of my own stuff. I keep writing and writing for television, writing for film as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just had to keep going. It's just keeping, it's putting bread.
But it's bread on the table. Bread also, it's a labor of love, isn't it?
And kids through school, university.
Oh, well,
Carol and I have managed to get three children through university. So, you know, and that's been, in my profession, being a freelance actor. But Carol's an artist now as well. She's a sculptor.
Mm-hmm.
She's called My Hairs and Graces, H-A-R-E-S.
Yes.
My Hairs and Graces. And she makes sculptures of pangolins and hares and cats and dogs. And so she's kept us going, actually, when times have been tough, like especially over COVID.
It's been a
huge struggle. I mean, I didn't work for 2.5 years.
Yeah. I don't know how your actors made it, some of the musicians as well.
So many sob stories from friends of mine. I mean, I've sold my cars. I don't have a car now. Well, we've got one car we share, but I used to have my own car and being able to get around and do radio spots and stuff like that. But all that's kind of finished, you know.
Oh, dear. And on a brighter note now, with this play that has been such a success and is sure it's going to be a success here in Cape Town at that lovely theatre there on the seashore, what do you have any other plans that you can tell us about, or are they all secret?
What? No secret. I keep on telling stories. I mean, I've got so many stories and they just keep coming, like a flood. And I love hearing stories, picking up stories, creating new stories. So I work a lot in film. I've got a few film projects, and I'm working with a particular company. And there's a film that's sort of in the pipeline. And also, I'm probably going to work on my memoirs.
You must.
You know, I tell stories of what the things that Billy and I have done in London and all over the place, Sweden and locally.
What would you call your autobiography? That's what I'd like to know.
I wonder if I should give the title away. I've got a very good title, but I'm very afraid of giving it to you now.
No, don't. Okay.
Because you know how. Remember, there was some actress who wrote a book called No Turn Unstoned.
That's right.
I can't remember what her name was. No Turn Unstoned. Whoa, what a wonderful name that was. And I think I've got a great name for my book. And I think people straight away will go, hey, that's amazing.
But okay.
You know the story Peter Dirk Ace about Oss, a farce
Oss about Ace. Yes.
He was given that in a pub somewhere. Some drunk guy said to him, next by order, you must call it Farce About Ace. And that's what he did.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that wasn't Peter's invention. But, so titles are stolen. Ideas are stolen.
Yes, indeed.
Often. And so I keep. Athol Fugard always says, when you're writing a play, don't tell the story until it's finished. Because then the desire to tell it actually goes away as well. Because once you've told it, So it's a very good thing to remember. And I say to writers, if you're writing something, you write it yourself. Finish the whole thing and then
bring it. Then tell
Don't the story. Ask me to help you to get this thing along.
Oh, okay.
Tell the story that's in your head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gosh, Paul, some good advice there for young aspirant writers out there.
Yes.
So we have to end now, unfortunately. Time has run out. But it's been great to talk to you and a bit of nostalgia, really, chatting to you. And then just to remind our listeners that your play, Fordsburg's Finest, has just opened at the Theatre on the Bay, Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay. It runs to the 10th of September. And now, your last piece of music is called Weeping.
And I'm choosing a whole lot of old songs that are long gone now, really. This also features in Forsberg's Finest, as you'll hear when you come and see it. It's an important song, and it deals with the time in South Africa that has passed, but it's a kind of an anthem, an anthem to that moment. And that's what the song is.
Paul Stablepsy, thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Ron.
It wasn't roaring.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
How's it? I'm Paul Slabolepsy. So glad to be bringing my heartwarming play, Fordsburg's Finest, to Peter Turin's Theatre on the Bay from the 19th of August to the 10th of September. Directed by Bobby Heaney and starring Chi Mende and yours truly, this play promises to be a magical evening at the theatre. Don't miss Fordsburg's Finest from the 19th of August to the 10th of September. Book now, only at Theatre on the Bay.